It's Thursday, March 24th, 2016, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, the world responds to the Brussels bombings. We'll look at the results of Tuesday's presidential primaries. What would a Donald Trump presidency mean for the economy? President Obama visits Argentina, and rap loses a pioneer. That's all coming up on VOA's International Edition. Intelligence officials say a 25-year-old Islamic State bomb maker who was involved in the Paris attacks in November was one of two suicide bombers who targeted the Brussels airport. Authorities say Najim Lachraoui, who was born in Morocco but grew up in Brussels, was identified as a key participant in the Paris attacks after his DNA was found on suicide vests used in the operation. His DNA was also found at an apartment in Brussels on Tuesday that authorities believe was where bombs were constructed. Meanwhile, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Wednesday a second man identified as a suicide bomber in the Brussels attacks had been detained by Turkey and deported to Europe, where he was released about 8 months ago. Erdogan said his government had warned authorities in Belgium about Ibrahim Bakrawi, who was stopped in southern Turkey near the border crossing into Syria. The Turkish president said El-Bakrawi was deported last July but was subsequently released by European authorities, despite our warnings that this person was a foreign terrorist fighter. His brother, 27-year-old Khalid El-Bakrawi, blew himself up aboard a metro train in Brussels at about the same time as the airport bombing. In Brussels Wednesday, the city honored those who died and those injured with a moment of silence. As Lisa Bryant reports, many residents are still in shock.
The square outside the Brussels Stock Exchange was packed at midday as Belgians gathered to mourn the victims of Tuesday's bombings that ripped through the city's airport and a subway car. A red and white banner posted on a marble pillar of the stock exchange read, "United Against Hatred." A group of youngsters spray-painted, "Love is Stronger," on a door nearby. Many here are in shock. Some count loved ones among the victims. Others are searching desperately for their whereabouts. City Hall worker Suzanne Ibrahim says she's worried about a close friend who was in the metro when it was attacked by a suicide bomber.
I only have a few details because he's still like in a critical situation, but he was in the explosion at the metro. And yeah, he was hit by the blast, so he's still in intensive care. And we don't know yet how he's going to make it or not.
Belgian authorities have identified brothers Khalid and Ibrahim El-Bakrawi as suicide bombers in the metro and airport attacks. Authorities also found bomb-making material in the apartment of Ibrahim El-Bakrawi, along with a note in a trash can that said he was being hunted down. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for the attacks that appear increasingly linked to November's Paris assaults.
Maintenant, nous sommes toujours tristes parce que bon, malheureusement, il n'y a que des victimes qui n'ont rien à voir, toutes des personnes comme vous et moi.
Brussels resident Larbia Bawi, like everyone else here, says he's sad about the bloodshed. Many attending the moment of silence here are Muslims like Arbawi, appalled that the attackers are acting in the name of their religion and worried they will be stigmatized as a result. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Brussels.
As Lisa mentioned, the Islamic State has claimed responsibility for Tuesday's attacks. President Obama, during a press conference with Argentina's president Wednesday, said that defeating the Islamic State group remains his number one goal.
I've got a lot of things on my plate, but my top priority is to defeat ISIL and to eliminate the scourge of this barbaric terrorism that's been taking place around the world. And we see high-profile attacks in Europe, but they're also killing Muslims throughout the Middle East, people who are innocent, people who are guilty only of worshiping Islam in a different way than this organization.
Here in the United States, Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz pledged to destroy what he called radical Islamic terrorism.
And this is a serious time with serious threats to our safety and security, and we need a commander-in-chief who understands the enemy and is prepared to do whatever is needed to defeat radical Islamic terrorism and to utterly destroy ISIS. That's what I'll do.
Cruz called for monitoring of Muslim neighborhoods in order to empower law enforcement to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. Democratic presidential candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called Cruz's comments irresponsible.
One thing we know that does not work is offensive, inflammatory rhetoric that demonizes all Muslims. So when Republican candidates like Ted Cruz call for treating American Muslims like criminals and for racially profiling predominantly Muslim neighborhoods, it's wrong, it's counterproductive, it's dangerous.
Clinton added that the fight against terrorism would be one of the most important challenges that the next president faces. She said the next commander-in-chief will find, in her words, a world of hard choices and complex problems. Time now to look at what the web is saying about the Brussels attacks. For that, we're joined by our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee. G, is the attack a trending topic on Twitter?
Yes, and especially for the leading contenders in both parties, it's one of the main messages they're trying to get out on Twitter. Donald Trump wrote, "Just watched Hillary Clinton deliver a prepackaged speech on terror. She has been in office fighting terror for 20 years, and look where we are."
Okay, so did Mrs. Clinton have anything to say about Mr. Trump's tweet?
She did. She sent out several tweets about the attack and Trump, but let's just read one. She wrote, "In our fight against radical jihadism, we have to do what actually works. What doesn't work is offensive rhetoric that demonizes all Muslims."
And what's the trending hashtag related to the attack?
A pretty disconcerting hashtag is trending following the Brussels attacks. It's hashtag Stop Islam, that's attempting to associate the religion with terrorism. But the real reason why it's trending is because just as many people are using the hashtag to criticize the effort to link the religion to violence. There's a lively conversation going on underneath a CNN Facebook post describing the hashtag and all over Twitter.
So can you give us an example?
Absolutely. Lexi Alexander is an LA-based filmmaker of Arab and German descent, and she sent out this tweet. Hashtag Stop Islam is trending. Sigh. I wish people would read more and hate less. Sending lots of love to my Muslim friends and family members. More than 4,300 people liked that tweet. Her handle is @LexiAlex.
Anything else trending?
Yes, and this is also related to the Brussels attacks. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani appeared on Fox News Tuesday and criticized President Obama for attending a baseball game in Cuba. And that clip is trending all over Facebook. That's all for me today, Dave.
Thanks, G. You can follow G on Twitter. Her handle is @JeeAbbeyLee. Our handle here at the show is @VOA_IE. Coming up, we'll look at the results and fallout of Tuesday's political primaries. President Obama visits Argentina, and rap loses a pioneer. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump and his rival Ted Cruz both had victories Tuesday in the U.S. presidential race. Trump easily won the Arizona primary, while Cruz won a lopsided victory in caucus voting in Utah. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton won in Arizona, but Bernie Sanders took Idaho and Utah. As Donald Trump moves closer to securing the Republican Party nomination, many establishment Republicans remain hesitant to heed his call to unite behind him as the nominee. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
With his latest victory in Arizona, Donald Trump took another step toward the Republican Party nomination. Trump says he's on track to win enough delegates to claim the nomination before the party nominating convention in July, and says it's time for reluctant party establishment figures to unify behind him.
If people want to be smart, they should embrace this movement. If they don't want to be smart, they should do what they're doing now, and the Republicans are going to go down to a massive loss.
But if Trump fails to secure enough delegates before the convention to receive the nomination, a multi-ballot open convention could ensue that would be unpredictable. House Speaker Paul Ryan has been mentioned by some as a possible compromise candidate if the convention becomes deadlocked.
That this is more likely to become an open convention than we thought before. So we're getting our minds around the idea that this could very well become a reality, and therefore those of us who are involved in the convention need to respect that.
Some conservatives, led by rival Ted Cruz, continue to resist Trump's rise toward the nomination. They say the New York billionaire is not a true conservative. Some are so disenchanted, they are looking for a conservative to mount a third-party bid in the general election, says conservative columnist Fred Barr.
I know many of them here in Washington who won't vote, who say they won't vote for Trump, and then others who are starting to, and I think will succeed in fielding a third-party conservative Republican candidate against Trump. And,
but any attempt to deny Trump the nomination could tear the party apart, says analyst Tom DeFrank.
How do you bring back the millions of disaffected Trump voters who are angry not only at Obama, President Obama, and Hillary Clinton, but also sick and tired of the Republican leadership in Washington? How do you get them back in the tent?
And in the aftermath of the terror attacks in Brussels, foreign policy has once again taken center stage in the campaign. The attacks are prompting renewed questions by Trump rivals Cruz and John Kasich whether Trump has the right temperament to be commander-in-chief. Both men have vowed to fight Trump all the way to the convention. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
If Donald Trump were elected president, what do you think that would mean for the U.S. and the world economy? Well, to find out, I spoke with author and journalist Jordan Goodman, the author of Fast Profits in Hard Times. He told me that a Trump presidency could have a devastating effect on the United States and, by extension, the world.
First thing, I think the stock market would crash by about 50% or so. Because he has got a lot of economic policies that we can analyze. The first one is to dramatically cut taxes on the corporate rate, which is now 35%. He's talking about bringing that down to 15%. On the individual rate, which is now a top rate of basically 40%, would come down to 25% and lower other brackets as well. So there would be a dramatic reduction in government revenues right away. Now, I think lowering tax rates does stimulate the economy, but you're not going to stimulate it enough to make up for that shortfall in revenue. There are estimates that in order to make up for the revenue shortfall of those tax cuts, U.S. economy would have to grow at roughly a 9% GDP rate. Hasn't ever done that, okay? We're maybe at 2% now. So on the revenue side, you're going to have much less revenue to the government. And then clearly he's going to spend a lot more money on defense, $200, $300 billion more, who knows how much, but a lot more on defense. A lot more on Homeland Security, deporting people. To deport 11 million so-called illegals would probably cost somewhere about $300 billion, something like that, as well as disrupt the economy. I mean, these people, for the most part, are not criminals. They're entrenched in society. They've got jobs. They're productive, and it would be disruptive in all kinds of different ways. It would hurt the economy as well. So big increase in spending, big deductions in taxes, and therefore the federal deficit is going to soar dramatically, which in itself will make interest rates go up, which makes the deficit go up even more. Right now, the U.S. has a kind of enviable position where we've got $19 trillion in debt, but a lot of that is at short-term rates of zero. The Treasury bills are pretty much paying zero these days. So if interest rates even went from zero to 1%, which doesn't sound like much, that in itself would make the deficit go up a lot. So if interest rates went up, the deficit went up, the stock market would not like that at all, and I think the stock market could go down dramatically, 50% or so from current levels.
Which has a cascading effect for the baby boom generation that's retiring and is depending on things like in Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare for expenses. They
right.
won't have that money to spend.
Yeah, and their retirements, their 401ks. I mean, we saw what happened in 2008, 2009. A lot of people lost 40, 50% of the value they'd built up in their 401ks and IRAs and stock portfolios. Now, if people could wait and have it recover, fine, but a lot of people couldn't. And so it really, really hurt people's retirements badly, and I think you'd get the same kind of situation here. In general, the world economy right now is in a deflationary trend, prices falling. We've seen oil, which was well over $100 a barrel, now down to about 40. Copper, steel, coal, lumber, soybeans, you name it, all of them are down dramatically, 40, 50, 60% from a year ago. And that's hurting countries around the world that are the exporters of those commodities.
Now, let's flip this. Hillary Clinton is the leading Democratic vote-getter as of this point in the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
What does a Clinton presidency mean for our wallets?
I think it's pretty much a continuation of what we have now. It depends to some extent on what happens with Congress. But say Congress remains, at least the House remains Republican and likely the Senate, pretty much as we've done. President Obama has not been able to get anything through the Congress. Everything he's done has basically been through executive action. Whether it be immigration, opening up to Cuba, the Keystone XL pipeline, you know, everything he's done has not been through Congress, basically. And I think the exact same thing would happen with President Clinton, is that everything she proposes is not going to get through Republican Congress. So gridlock continues, I guess, is the idea.
That's author and journalist Jordan Goodman. You can find out more about him by logging on to moneyanswers.com. Coming up, President Obama pays a state visit to Argentina, and rap loses a pioneer lyricist. This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama met with Argentina's new president, Mauricio Macri, on Wednesday, praising the center-right leader for reforms to create a stronger economy in his country. At a joint news conference, Mr. Obama pledged to work more closely with the Argentine leader after years of tensions.
President Macri is a man in a hurry. I'm impressed because he has moved rapidly on so many of the reforms that he promised to create more sustainable and inclusive economic growth and to reconnect Argentina with the global economy and the world community. And today, in a show of confidence in Argentina's new direction, Many U.S. businesses are announcing tens of millions of dollars in new investment here in Argentina, which can be part of the broader package of investment that can lead to new jobs and economic growth here in this country.
Macri has distanced himself some from South America's leftist bloc, allies of former President Cristina Fernandez. He has also sought a warmer relationship with Western leaders as he seeks new investment in Latin America's number three economy. President Macri also offers Mr. Obama an ally in South America. Obama also said that he and the Argentine president had discussed the current political crisis in Brazil.
In terms of Brazil, we didn't discuss it extensively other than the fact that we hope Brazil resolves its current political crisis in an effective way. It is a big country. It is a friend to both of our countries. The good news, and President Macri, I think, pointed this out, their democracy is sufficiently mature. Their systems of laws and structures, I think, are strong enough that this will get resolved in a way that allows Brazil ultimately to prosper and be the significant world leader that it is. We need a strong and effective Brazil for our own economies and for world peace.
The American president acknowledged that U.S. relations with Latin America's dictatorships in the 1970s damaged its image in the region, but he said he hopes the release of long-classified documents about Argentina's dirty war will help rebuild trust. Obama's visit coincides with the 40th anniversary of the start of a brutal military dictatorship in Argentina that led to the deaths or disappearance of about 30,000 people. Later today, Mr. Obama plans to go to a park built in memory of those victims.
Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer because you see I last...
A pioneer of hip-hop, lyricist Fife Dawg of A Tribe Called Quest has died. Dawg, born Malik Isaac Taylor, died Tuesday from complications of diabetes, according to a family statement. I spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the life and contributions of Fife Dawg.
Yeah, it is a tragedy, and he was a master lyricist, and he was sort of the fun one of A Tribe Called Quest. The Tribe, of course, Q-Tip, Ali Shaheed Muhammad, and Fife Dawg, and he was the guy that would come on, and as you said, he'll come on, he'll say something, and you're like, oh, I can't believe he just said that. Did he really just say that? That was so funny. That was so clever. He was a clever guy, but unfortunately, he was suffering from type 1 diabetes, and it was well known, and we got to see this in 2001, there was a movie called Beats, Rhymes, and Life about Tribe Called Quest. And we got to see in that movie that although he was aware that he had diabetes and that he was supposed to take care of himself in a certain way, he, you know, he enjoyed life. And unfortunately, that included some foods and things that one with diabetes shouldn't. A lot of sugar, things like that. So he was ill during the filming of the movie, and he had to have a kidney replaced, I believe, and it was kind of, unfortunately, downhill from there as far as his health was concerned.
Now, what would you say was his main contribution to hip-hop from Quest and, you know, from his lyrics? Did other people, because there's other Machine Gun lyricists, Eminem comes to my mind, but they pull things and you have to sit down with a piece of paper and read the lyrics and go, wait a minute, did he really? Is that because of Fife? Was he like a pioneer in that way?
Well, I don't know that I would consider Fife to be a Machine Gun lyricist necessarily. I mean, he didn't have that really super fast delivery. He was clever. You know, when I think of a Kanye West, for example, I'm like, okay, Kanye obviously, and I'm talking about early Kanye West here, obviously was influenced by Fife Dawg, because Fife, again, would put things, I mean, he called himself the 5-foot assassin. And I mean, there are lyrics, I don't know that I can repeat them here on the air, but because some of them were, you know, a little risque.
Right.
But again, just to hear these things come out of his mouth, they you would stop. You would think to yourself, number one, he is such a lyricist. He really has this interesting command of the English language. And number two, he does it kind of in jest. Like he didn't take himself very seriously. At least it didn't appear that he did lyrically. I'm sure as a lyricist, We know as a lyricist, as a hip hop artist, he took himself seriously. And Tribe Called Quest, they provided the soundtrack for a generation. If you were coming up in the early 90s or the mid 90s and you were a hip hop fan, even if you were a pop music fan, because they began to kind of move into that arena as well, you were familiar with at least one song. You had at least heard Bonita Applebum if you had heard nothing else. And with Fife and then Q-Tip's production, because Q-Tip is a phenomenal producer, and he would always take these really sort of eccentric, kind of off-the-wall samples and create masterpieces out of them. That is the contribution, I think, that Fife and then the group Tribe Called Quest made to hip-hop.
Reaction to Fife Dawg's death included his bandmates, who said in a statement, "Our hearts are heavy, we are devastated. This is something we weren't prepared for, although we all know that life is fleeting." Rapper Ice Cube posted on Twitter, "RIP to the one they call Fife, style inventor Fife Dawg." Timbaland posted, "Tribe is a group we idolized coming up. I'm really saddened by this news and will keep your family in my prayers." Follow us for the funky behavior. Make a note for the record we gave you. Feel free, drop your pants, check your hair. Do you like the garments that we wear? I instruct you to be the obeyer. And former big league catcher and popular broadcaster Joe Garagiola has died. He was 90 years old. The Arizona Diamondbacks say that Garagiola died Wednesday. He only played 8 seasons in the majors, but generations of fans knew him for his 57-year career in broadcasting, including a 30-year association with NBC. He won baseball's Ford C. Frick Award for Excellence in Broadcasting in 1991. Garagiola kept working well into his 80s, serving as a part-time analyst for Diamondbacks telecasts. And a Chinese national has pleaded guilty to helping hackers break into computer networks of major U.S. defense contractors. The Justice Department said Wednesday that Su Bin faces a maximum 5-year sentence for conspiring with 2 other people in China to steal plans for the F-22 and F-35 fighter jets and the C-17 transport aircraft. Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Zubair Taib was our engineer. Find more on the stories you hear on our program at voanews.com. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. flags have been lowered to half-staff throughout the United States, its embassies and bases, as a sign of respect for the victims of terror attacks that killed at least 30 and injured more than 200 in Brussels. "The thoughts and prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium," said U.S. President Barack Obama.
"We stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally Belgium in bringing to justice those who are responsible."
The tragedy occurred during the morning rush hour Tuesday when Brussels was rocked by 3 blasts, 2 at the Zaventem airport and 1 at the Malbik train station. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the coordinated attacks. "The notion that any political agenda would justify the killing of innocent people like this is something that is beyond the pale," President Obama said in an interview with the press. "We are going to continue with the over 60 nations that are pounding ISIL and are going to go after them." Leaders from Europe and the broader international community have responded to the attacks with similar messages of solidarity and condemnation. "This is yet another reminder that the world must unite," said President Obama.
"We must be together, regardless of nationality, or race, or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism. We can and we will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of people all around the world."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage,
at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4-1.